Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. We've got dinosaurs, dangerous toys, digital marketing, and decorative public art this morning, starting with Dino Man and finishing with Whale's Tales creator Jim Sardonis. Let's get this week started with paleontology and how a guy from the Mad River Valley is getting kids interested in science. Joining me now is Dino Man himself, Bob Lasias. Bob, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. I'm really good.
Excellent. Listeners, to ask Bob a question about dinosaurs or the intricate rules of field hockey, you can call us at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Bob, pre-Dino Man, whatever era that was, what did you do for a living?
I've done many things for a living, and just to really impress your audience, back in the 1980s, I was on TV. I did a whole bunch of TV shows, and in front of me, right, Rick, this is unbelievable, I have my residual check for an episode of the TV show Fame. If you can remember the TV show Fame,
of course.
You're old.
Irene Cara, I think. Was that the movie or was she in the
I think that
TV?
Was the movie.
Okay, all right.
But I just so, you know, just people can know how legit I am. The amount of money from my most recent residual check is 0.02. It is 2 cents, Rick. They mailed me a check for 2 cents.
Well, Bob, if you need protection as you take that to the bank, you just let me know.
Yeah, so I did that. And then my wife and I moved to Vermont to start a family. Mm-hmm. And we ran the Stowe Playhouse, the Barry Opera House, the Bundy Theater in the Mad River Valley. And we had a fourth company, the Great Memphremagog Traveling Stage Troupe. So we would hire 70 actors out of Boston and do those things. We did that for a long I don't know, 12 years.
Wow.
It was wonderful. It was
so performance is definitely in your blood.
Yeah. Yeah, forever. So, you know, high school, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then we moved here to start a family.
Yeah.
And that's the grandkids are now here in the house. So they're from Costa Rica and they're visiting for the summer.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, what exactly is the Dino Man Science Series?
Oh, right. Well, my dad had a stroke, so we moved him in with us, and we stopped doing the summer theater kind of to take care of him. Mm-hmm. And then my wife said, you have to get a job, you know, how's wives do. And so I said, I don't know. And I've had rock collections my entire life. I've dug up dinosaurs in, you know, all out west in the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming. And she said, you should do a show on dinosaurs. And I said, no one will buy a show on dinosaurs. And she said, if I book it, will you do it? So in 2 weeks, she had 20 bookings for me. And we've been going ever since. So I have giant life-size dinosaurs that I sew myself. I have 7 of them. I don't have 8. Because if I have 8, the wife says she'll leave. So 7. And I've been Maryland.
You cannot let her leave. She has saved your career, Bob.
She saved everything all the time. So I started in Maryland this summer. And my last summer show is at a school in Hoboken, New Jersey, at the end of the week. And I've done 94 programs this summer.
Wow.
So I'm happy. Yeah, I love doing it. I'm hoping, you know, I'm looking forward to field hockey season. Let's just put it that way.
So you only do these during the summer or?
No. Well, it might seem that way because of COVID. Schools really haven't opened up fully.
Gotcha.
So I was like semi since last January, schools have been booking. I do a lot of library programs, and they're back. But museums, for some reason, have lagged. Mm. So I haven't done that many museum things.
Gotcha.
But hopefully it'll pick up.
See how quickly I'm trying to put COVID in the rearview mirror. It's like, oh, right, that COVID thing. What was
COVID
that?
COVID thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And for me, since it shut down for 2 years, you know, every time they say monkeypox, I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I know. Yeah.
Well, in addition to dinosaurs, what other subjects do you perform?
Oh, as an extension of, I have a space program where I talk about, and once again, you have to kind of treat it lightly because I talk about why the dinosaurs aren't here. And I go through the solar system, ending up with asteroids, and how the dinosaurs died from asteroids.
Gotcha.
But it's fun and it's zany, and you know, and that is based pretty much, obviously, on facts of the planet. And I do want to say that I think it was great that they halted the Artemis rocket takeoff just so they wouldn't interrupt this today for us. NASA looking out for the little guy, and I appreciate that. But then liquid nitrogen is a big part of that, right? How cold space can be, how cold planets can be. And kids love, they love liquid nitrogen. So it is a lot of fun.
And do you still do one about scientists?
I do. Superheroes of Science.
Superheroes of Science.
Yes. And once again, what's great about science is if you're into it and you're smart enough, you know, you can come from anywhere to discover amazing things that are still going on, like even today.
Yeah.
But, you know, we hit on the heavies, right? Einstein. If you're in the paleontology world, Mary Anning from England. But then, you know, there's Michael Faraday, you know, hero of magnetics and electricity. So all those guys are hit on as well. And I have these giant inflatable props that kind of point to their experiments or actually do the experiments on stage so kids can actually see it. A lot of kids don't know about magnets. I mean, they know magnets. They don't know what magnets can do. And it is astounding what they can do.
Yeah. So I take it my favorite scientist, Linus Pauling, didn't make it into your superheroes.
Linus Pauling did not.
Darn.
He did not make it in. He did not.
It's
but
funny,
I might, though. He might be next time.
Okay. You mentioned that great scientists can come from anywhere. There's a small town out in Oregon that has had two Nobel Prize winners in science.
See?
Yeah, from the same town.
It's absolutely – and I know we don't live there, but – like something like 50% of all Nobel Prize winners live within 50 miles of downtown Boston, which it's an incredible amount of brain resource that is here. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And these dinosaurs that invade the school. I think like when you show up, dinosaur tracks somehow mysteriously start leading into the school. And you've handmade these things. So describe, these dinosaurs when they're, you know, all ready to go.
Well, So at the beginning, I had someone in Maine, a gentleman, George York, who is wonderful, and he actually used to do the Ben and Jerry's thing up here at Sugarbush.
Huh.
He made my first dinosaurs.
Gotcha.
But as I needed more and more, he was booked up. He didn't have time to get them to me quick enough. So all my daughters sew, my wife sews, and I got a Singer S16 semi-pro single stitch sewing machine, which I highly recommend. And I just started, there's a place in Connecticut that sells seconds of hot air balloon material. I guess if you make a hot air balloon, you don't really want to work with the seconds. So I can do that. And I go down and I pick up, you know, hundreds and hundreds of yards. And then I come home and, you know, with a hot knife, you cut out the pieces. My first dinosaurs, you know, because I'm not good at this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started making tubes and connecting tubes of different size. So it looked a little cartoony. But I've been doing it now for 20 years, actually building the dinosaurs. So they have baffles inside and you can sculpt them. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I could just see at the balloon material factory, the intern says, well, the seconds, we'll put them out. People will buy them. And everybody's like, who is going to buy these things? And then Bob Lasaya shows up, and there you go.
I take everything they have.
That's right.
Every year.
Bob, how far and wide have you traveled as Dino Man?
From all the way down to San Diego and all the way up to Halifax, Canada. So I've been all over the country, but now because
North America.
Flying is so difficult, I pretty much just do the driving stuff.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, so it's from Maryland all the way up to the to way up in Frenchville, Maine.
Mm.
And I go almost every single year. So and so they pack small, you know, in, I don't know, the size of like maybe two ice coolers, and then they inflate to life-size size.
And how, like when you go to a place, you need some room to spread out and inflate these bad boys. So, like, how much room do you need to put on a show?
I the ceiling should be, they can't. This can happen in an 8-foot ceiling. I don't suggest it. But if you have 10-foot ceilings and it's 20 feet wide by 10 feet deep, we will have no problems. The most favorable situation. It was at the old Richmond Library, which was literally like a 10-foot by 10-foot space. And it rained. We were going to do it outside. We had to go inside. And the dinosaurs actually did attack the library that day. There were bookshelves being knocked down. It was not. They didn't invite me back for a good 15 years. And I think that was big of them. I thought it was going to be lifetime.
Somebody says, hey, what about Dino Man? No.
No.
No, he's not coming back. He's not coming back till we all retire and forget about
it. That's right. That's somebody else's problem.
I'd love to have you in the studio I'm in right now. It can easily fit it high, but I don't have the – I don't even think this is 10 by 10 where I'm sitting. So keep the dinosaurs where you have them right now, Bob. Bob, why is this an approach to teaching science subjects that you think works?
You know, you can see dinosaurs in a book, right? You can read all you want. You can see them on TV, right? National Geographic does things way better than I could ever do. But to see the grandness, how big these things were, it's amazing. You know, I've done this show thousands of times. But at the end of the show, no matter how poorly it goes, when these dinosaurs inflate, the kids are just amazed. They are just – they've never seen these things before. And it's just – they can't believe things could ever be on the Earth that big that walked around. So I think, is the major reason for my success over the years.
So even if you get a C-minus, the dinosaurs always get an A-plus when you're at these –
They do.
Yeah.
They I have done many shows. I have never had this confidence in the end of a show before. It's wonderful.
What ages or grades do you perform for?
I go anywhere from kindergarten through high school, but it seems the sweet spot is second and third graders.
Hmm.
If they could vote, I would run for president. I think I could do pretty well.
Just right in Dino Man.
That's right. That's right. And they're still, you know, they're still very curious, very inquisitive. Even kids who don't like dinosaurs, there's enough fun stuff in the show to get them, you know, hooked. And then when the dinosaurs come at the end, everybody enjoys seeing them.
Hmm.
So it works out great.
So how long have you been doing this, and how has the presentation changed in that time?
Well, oh boy, I've been doing it forever. And I would say it's at the beginning, it was just very strict science. There's a show, another big dinosaur show, but they have great looking puppets and stuff. And it's dinosaurs on stage. You know, it's $150 a ticket. My kids weren't going to go to that. So I'm not at that level. And they do a very dramatic presentation. I started off just very science pretty much all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, it's a lot more humorous. There's a ton of magic. One of the things, you know, that you learn in child psychology, when kids get to age 4, they know how the world works. So, you know, whatever you're doing, they know how that works. They don't have to pay attention. But if you do magic, it really jars their environment. And it's a real attention getter for elementary school students. So there's an awful lot of that in the show. And of course, there's my raccoon who attacks me in the beginning of the in the middle of the show. And that seems to be a big. Usually it's a fun thing for the audience, or it's where the audience turns on me, the raccoon. But his name is Reflex. I got him from a government program called Jugular, right? They were teaching raccoons how to attack, but they were taken off task by the scent of garbage. So they put him up for adoption. I got mine through Raccoon Rescue.
Oh, and if
I bring him out of state, I do get time and a half community service hours, and I will be done in September 2027. Looking forward to that date.
Bob Lasias, who leads the country in rabies shots. Bob, have you heard from any of your early DinoMan attendees who have pursued paleontology or astrophysics?
I don't know about astrophysics, but I a number of people have decided to go to college for it, and I don't know if they're still studying it. I have a friend who from Massachusetts who now is the head of paleontology at Casper College in Wyoming. Hmm. And anybody who's thinking about paleontology, I send them out there. Wow. You know, there's not a lot to do. You're going to be focused on that subject, and you're going to learn a ton. We are finding one brand new dinosaur a week somewhere on the Earth.
So you have
a new species, a brand new name. And we've done that for the past 5 years. So this is the golden age of paleontology.
Oh, that's exciting.
Any better.
Wow. Of course, I can see these kids getting to paleontology 101 and at the end saying, where are the blow-up dinosaurs, man? What's going on here?
There's a big fork in the road there. And, you know, I love being outside. But if you dig up dinosaurs in Wyoming in the summer, right, it's 110, 115, there's no shade. It is rough on a lot of people who have never, you know, kind of done that kind of work. So they become preparers, right? They clean up the bones in museums and things like that. So that is where it's those people who are out sweating in the dirt. Those are my people.
Yes.
Those are the ones that can find stuff. And you know, when you see a fossil, you're the first person ever, right, if you've dug it up, to see that ever. And it's kind of, you know, it kind of blows your mind sometimes when you're thinking about that.
Oh, that's brilliant. What do you hope the kids take away from your performance?
That science is fun. It is obtainable. It's for everybody. You know, I mean, I was joking about the Artemis rocket, but how cool is this that, you know, we have SpaceX, now we have a rocket that can go back to the moon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our total budget in our country, it is so little, but it's like saving for the future, right? It's our 401k for America. And I just think it's wonderful that kids get to see stuff like that and can dream. And, you know, look at all the, you know, our Star Wars and stuff. There's so much of that out there that I think it's wonderful that we can think forward like that.
Yeah. And, you know, have you gotten – what kind of feedback do you receive from teachers about
the – Don't come back. Stay away. These kids are – no. No, it's I have many –
For one night only, Bob the Dino Man.
Right. Well, I get really good feedback. Like this summer I was sold out, right? I could have done another 40 or 50 shows. Wow. Many schools have me back over and over and over again. A lot of school districts, however, have gone to a more open science curriculum where they don't teach dinosaurs specifically. And obviously this is self, you know, fulfilling for me. They teach fossils and stuff like that. But you probably know young kids who love dinosaurs, right? The 4-year-old who can name more dinosaurs than I can.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like at every 10th school I go to. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So they want to broaden the outlook on fossils and talk about fossilized mammals and things like that. All great. But, you know, kids are with Jurassic Park and all that kind of stuff are inundated with dinosaurs. They want to show their knowledge on dinosaurs. So that's the only, you know, little caveat I would give. I would say go back to teaching dinosaurs because that'll hook more kids in.
Mm. Now, take the Dino Man cape off for a minute. What can you tell me about Bay Chapel, written by R.L. Lasias?
Oh, yeah, right. I've written a couple of books under different names, but that is my book, and it's about field hockey and lobsters. It was not a bestseller. I can't figure out why field hockey and lobsters. So
although this would have sold a lot, not lobsters playing field hockey.
Oh, that could be Super Bowl activity, right next to the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of Dino Man shows on the coast of Maine, and I have befriended a number of Maine fishermen, and they take me out on their boats and stuff, and so I just thought it would be a great setting. Because I think you go to field hockey games.
I do, yeah. And you officiate them. Is that right?
Yeah, Yes, I do middle school.
Yep.
There's a big need for that, and I think it's a lot more fun for me. But they, you know, all my daughters played. Two of them played in college, and I even went to the Pan Am Games in Spooky Hollow, Pennsylvania. And what a crazy name for a town, but they have a giant complex there. And so, you know, and then you watch men play field hockey,
yeah.
And it's so much quicker. They do stuff like ice hockey people do, right? Picking up the ball on the stick.
Yeah. Throw
it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't think it gets enough play in this country, to be honest with you. It is an incredible sport.
We got a minute and a half left. We had a caller who wanted you to mention your YouTube series that you had on during the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, more things are going up on it. Yes, Mountain Time with Bob. And I taught how to tap maple trees with knives, how to fix your car with fiber, a whole bunch of stuff there, how to dig a tunnel under your house. These are all ha-ha jokey things. But the one about digging tunnels under the house, a lot of criticism in the YouTube criticism or message thing underneath. People really wanted to know how to build tunnels under their houses. And that's shocking to me. I don't know. Who has time? Why are you building a tunnel into your house?
And had you actually done that, that would have ended the marriage once and for all, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it would take forever. It would take forever.
Yeah. All right. We got 30 seconds. One really cool dinosaur fact to leave us with.
Louise, now you threw me right in there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, soft-shelled dinosaur eggs, right? Every year we find out new stuff. But about 2 years ago at the South Pole, they found a soft-shell dinosaur egg. It's a mousesaur. It's not really a dinosaur. It's a swimming reptile, but we don't have to go there.
Yeah.
But soft-shelled. We didn't think dinosaurs had soft-shelled eggs, and since then, it looks like we found five more around the world. So we thought we knew everything about dinosaur eggs, and no, we don't. We have to start a whole new study on them and see how they connect with alligators and crocodiles.
New discoveries. Bob Lasaias is Dino Man. You can learn more about what he's doing to get kids chuffed about science at dinoman.org. Bob, it was great to hear about this. Thanks for being on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. We're going to take a break for CBS News. Then we'll come back and get those phones open and hear about the perilous danger you faced as a kid playing with toys. And tonight, the Sox travel to the Twin Cities. Our coverage begins at 6:40. First pitch in Minneapolis is at 7:40. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Did you know that Radio Vermont Group Digital Services can create videos, including drone footage? We've even won awards for our videos. If you'd like to learn more and see examples of our work, go to rvgdigital.com. Radio Vermont Group. We're more than just radio.
You can email vtviewpoint at radiovermont.com. We'll pick up the dangerous toys of your youth talk that highlighted our open phones on Friday. I'd have to say Bob in Hardwick won that round with the lead smelting kit he received as a kid to make toy soldiers in the basement. Brian in Eden came dangerously close to the top prize with the Dodge Jarts game his neighborhood friends would play. Anybody catching this from our house band Billabuff and the Bold Vikings? It's Sugarloaf's Don't Call Us, We'll Call You. Of course, this is a bit counter to the rules of open phones. You need to still call us, okay? All right, dangerous toys or whatever category you'd like to choose from. Phones are open till 10, 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. Well done, boys. And I think Sugarloaf, I think their big hit was Green Eyed Lady. But this was like, yeah, their other hit. I really liked this as a kid. All right, here we go. We head to Newbury, the Duke of Newbury, the Duke without portfolio. Your Grace, Fred. Good morning, Fred.
Very good.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm confused, and I got a big question, and I just wondered what's going on. And here's my question.
Yes.
The search warrant on Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
The Justice Department had a search warrant on Mar-a-Lago, so they go searching, looking for papers and so on and so forth.
Which they found.
Which I tell, yeah.
Yeah, which they found.
So here's what happened. This is what I saw on television. And I'll have to admit, I saw it on Fox.
All right.
But anyways, I don't know if it's true or not. But anyways, a reporter asked the President of the United States if he knew that the President's residence was going to be searched by the FBI.
Right.
And the President said he didn't know.
That's right.
Okay, so now the big question is, can you imagine that? I can't even imagine that.
I can.
Here you are. You're the President of the United States, and your Justice Department is going to search your predecessor's house for boxes of papers, and
right.
You didn't know about it.
Right.
I mean, that is blows my mind.
Not me.
I say to myself,
it's none of his business.
Who's running the country?
He is.
Who's running the country?
He is, but he's not signing off on affidavits. Fred, he's not signing off on affidavits of the FBI. When you're president, you'll find this as well. Now, what I'm really surprised about, Fred, though, is that you have been banging this drum about the U.S. Army and, you know, people being able to get in and failing the tests. And now, did you hear about the program that they've launched and to help people pass that test, and like 50% who go through the program? I thought for sure this is where you were going to go today.
No. I wasn't going to go there because the Army's desperate. They have to do that.
Yeah.
They're desperate.
But I mean, think about this.
You got to do desperate things.
Yeah, but now wait, Fred. Now think about, you know, kids taking the SATs, right? You know, they're all getting instructions on how to be, you know, perform better on that test. You have been saying, you know, we need more in the Army. What about instituting the draft, which would, when you're president again, you'll be impeached if you try launching that lead balloon. So this is a program that could help increase the numbers in the U.S. Army, which you've been advocating for in a very positive way.
Yes, that's true. In the Army right now, here's what the Army's doing right now. The Army right now is doing, if you're overweight, they've got a program to try to get you back into shape again.
Sure.
While you're a civilian.
I'd like to get in that program. I would let the Army work me to drop about a stone, maybe a stone and a half right now.
But the issue is this.
Yeah.
And this is the important issue.
Go ahead.
The people who don't want to go into the Army. Here's what they say.
Would be those who would be drafted. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the pool is 30 million people are eligible for the draft.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so you have to take out the people that have got a criminal record. And then you have to take out the people that are overweight. And so the Army's trying to do something about this overweight business.
Sure.
And they're trying to reduce that,
yep.
Right? And then the other issue is, what they're doing is to pass the ABVAST test. They let you take practice
right.
Stuff.
Right, that's know, right.
On it
when I took,
right?
Yeah.
So still, what you're getting is you're getting marginal people because the people who are able to have paragraph comprehension and do arithmetic, they're not even bothering to do this. So you're still getting below average people.
I don't buy it. When I took the GMATs to go to grad school, I took practice tests and then, you know, and I went back and looked at areas that I was deficient in and relearned geometry, for instance, and I passed. All right. We'll move on to one more thing and then I got to move on, Fred. The Rick and Fred show, and people, you're getting a taste of what it would actually be like right now. But I think it should be called the Frederick Show.
Oh, you're being too generous.
Well, no, we put our names together. Frederick. Fred Rick.
Yeah,
The Frederick Show.
Oh, Frederick.
Yeah, the Frederick.
Frederick Show. Okay, all right, I buy that.
All right, there we go. Thanks. Thanks, Duke. That's it for today. You've been great. Thanks for playing our game. The Duke of Newbury, the Duke without portfolio, your grace, Fred. Always great to hear from him from Newbury. All right. Phones are open, 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. We have been talking about these dangerous toys, okay? And one was creepy crawlers where you would have these, like, molten these lead molds you'd pour goop into. Then they came out with something called Shrinky Dinks, and I guess this stuff is still around. But you would cut this plastic paper, you'd color these images that were on there, and I think it had its own little oven that you put it in, and it would be dangerously hot, and you'd have these little tongs that you'd pull these things out with then. And they shrunk up and thickened up, and I don't know, you're supposed to make jewelry or something out of, but they were incredible. Again, you were right around the hot little stove with, like, no protection and, of course, no supervision. Hey, let's head to the Adirondacks and talk to Kathleen. It is wonderful to hear from you, Kathleen. What do you got for us today?
Hey, I was going to mention, or I thought of it just this morning, I don't know if this is under the same subject, but my brother took my father's engine from a lawnmower,
yeah,
or an old lawnmower that he wasn't using, and somehow put together a go-kart out of, like, plumbing pipes
and
this lawnmower engine and a steering wheel off another toy and put me in it. And I ran through the neighbor's front porch and right into their... right through the pillars of their porch and their screened-in porch and just collapsed it. So that was...
were you okay?
I was fine, but I, you know, again, it was just, you know, my family continues to talk about this at holidays and whatnot, and just the things that the kids were, you know, you just go outside and play.
Right.
And who knows what you come up with. So anyway, have a great day.
Wait, don't go away. Don't go away. I think every neighborhood had... somebody had either a mini bike or like a go-kart like this, right? That someone would fashion. Now, Kathleen, when you're going on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, were you wearing a helmet or any protection of any sort?
No, in fact, there's a photo that somebody took. It wasn't my mother. She was just panicked, but somebody in the neighborhood took a photo and shared it with us.
Yeah.
I had on sandals and
cut-off
shorts and a t-shirt.
Yep. Exactly.
And I just went, we lived on a big hill, and
all the kids
in the neighborhood would sled with those, you know, radio flyer sleds that were dangerous.
Yep. Flexible flyers.
And we lived on a big hill, and he just said, go.
That's right.
But I don't think there were brakes, or if there were, I didn't know where they were.
Well, in our town, the city, I mean, it would be on a street where cars would come by. The city would put cinders down at the bottom of the hill to slow you down.
Yeah, that
worked. Oh, Kathleen, I'm so glad you survived it, though. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, thank you.
Wonderful.
Have a great day.
You too. All right. Judy, we'll get to you in just a moment. We're going to take a break. Let's talk to Judy in Barrie. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I was able to have the fun flower set that was like creepy crawlers.
Oh, right. That's right.
I also had the easy bit. I had the Susie Homemaker, and we figured out how to keep the door open with a piece of plastic so that we could check on it.
Oh, yeah.
So we could get burned. But I also wanted to mention the Red Ryder BB gun.
Yes. Made famous in the Christmas story. Yeah.
And the slingshot.
Oh, slingshot, of course. Yeah.
And bow and arrows. I had a friend lose an eye because of a bow and arrow.
I've got to stop laughing at all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, these things did happen. It was a bit scary. Slingshots. Yeah.
Riding double and triple on our bikes.
Right. Big deal, right? You were going somewhere. I got one bike. I got two friends. Hop on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We did, most of us. Thanks, Judy, for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So there were two brands. Everybody always talks about the Easy Bake Oven, but there was Susie Homemaker. And My parents got my sister onto the Susie Homemaker chain of events, you know, got her the oven to start with. And she was, I got to tell you, she's the greatest sister anybody could ever have. Three boys and one girl. And so, especially when she was younger and didn't have, you know, other girlfriends around, we had to play Barbie dolls and we had to play Mystery Date, which was a board game that she had. And when she got the Susie Homemaker oven, that kind of turned the tide because she could bake us a cake. And honestly, you had these two blazing hot 100 watt bulbs over this cake. And like Judy just said, you know, the door was closed. You couldn't tell what was going on in there. It was hot. I mean, the whole thing, I can't believe like the plastic just didn't melt around this cake, but she'd pull it out, you know, and it's like, okay, I think it's ready. And then you'd eat it and, the top would be baked and then the bottom would just be like goo. It was like, if anybody knows the Amish shoe fly pie, it was kind of on that level. But not as delicious and certainly not intended. God knows what was in that batter. But anyway, we were a Susie Homemaker family, not an Easy Bake Oven family. Somebody mentioned Chemistry Set the other day. This reminded me that as we got older, we got into like high school years, my buddy still had his Chemistry Set and we took corn. And we thought we were going to make moonshine. We were trying to make moonshine with the Chemistry Set. That's what kids do. All right, let's head to Morrisville. We got Steve on the line. Steve, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. When I was a kid, I think I was probably like 5 years old.
Yeah.
I asked my mother for an Easy Bake Oven.
Yeah.
And she told me no, those were for girls. And she never bought me the Easy Bake Oven. But I ended up going to the Culinary Institute of America, and I became a chef. And on my 30th birthday, my mother got me an Easy Bake Oven.
Oh, I love this story so much.
So there you go. I still have it.
Mom, you can try to stop me from becoming a culinary chef, but I'm going to get there. And she finally gave in at age 30, which is, Steve, I got to say, which is about the right age to be handling those things, right?
Yeah, right. Well, I just bought my first house, and that was a housewarming
present. Oh, man. That's beautiful. Now, have you baked anything, or is it just for decorative purposes only?
I never used it. It's still in the box. It was still in the box. She got it at a yard sale, you know.
It's of course.
Still in the box.
Yeah.
That it came in. So,
oh, never I love used that.
It. It's a, you know, I thought I'd give it to my daughter, but she didn't want nothing to do with it.
So
can't blame her.
Yeah.
It's pretty hot in the kitchen.
Yeah. So are you working at a restaurant, Steve?
I actually just retired from the restaurant business, and I'm working maintenance in an apartment building.
Oh, excellent. All right. Yeah, the hours.
That's a lot less stressful.
Yeah, I bet. Good
and
for
I
you.
Spend more time with the family.
Oh, that's great to hear. Steve, I love that. Great message.
I listen all the time, Rick. Thanks for great shows.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I love that. Mom, how smart is that? The 30th birthday present. Here is the Easy Bake Oven that I wouldn't let you have at age 5. That is beautiful. All right, let's see. One more thing we talked – oh, the geology kit. So Dennis had the chemistry set, which we later tried to use to make our own moonshine. And we were heating water and corn and God knows what it would have created, but the Bunsen burner just created so much carbon on the bottom of the – beaker or whatever we were heating that it never did work. But I mentioned that I didn't have the chemistry set. I had the geology kit. And I said, you know, it's kind of benign. But my friend Craig texted me and reminded me that so you had these rocks, you had a hammer, and you were supposed to chip away at the rocks with the hammer. first of all, you had a hammer that you could have swung at anyone, which kids did. But you were chipping away at this rock and pieces were flying everywhere. And he said, did it come with safety glasses? No, it did not. You were just chipping away. Little pieces of stone are flying everywhere. You're dodging them left and right. I didn't wear glasses at the time. And so he pointed out one of the flaws of the geology kit was, you did not have safety glasses. You never even thought about it. Although, my father worked in the steel mill and he wouldn't ever, go to work without putting safety goggles over, the glasses he already wore. But there I am chipping away, junior geologist. And, pieces are flying everywhere. All right. Hey, that was a lot of fun. Dante, I think it's time to find that button that powers down the phones for another fabulous day of open phones. You got a little taste of the Frederick show when Fred and I go on the road. Fred from Newbury, the Duke. We're going to break for CBS News, and then we'll return to speak with Nathan Wright about WDEV Digital. And coming up this morning at 11 o'clock, we've got Common Sense Radio. That's with Bill Sayre. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
We hope you're enjoying this podcast of Vermont Viewpoint with Rick Singeri. You can find podcasts of some of the other programs on our website. In addition, we also have CBS podcasts, including Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley and 60 Minutes. For a full listing of podcasts, visit our website at WDEVradio.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. I like to think I keep up on technology and am fairly tech savvy, but I also know that if I owned a company, I'd need some serious help on understanding the many platforms there are right now to promote the biz. And I want you to understand, listeners, that I'm about to seriously hop out of the car and pump the tires of the Radio Vermont Group. Well, my guest will. But if you're a business owner, this can be incredibly helpful. Joining me now is Nathan Wright. He's our Director of Digital Marketing. Nathan, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
You're welcome. Now, listeners, if you'd like to ask Nathan a question about digital marketing, call us 802-244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Nathan, I write these questions up, you know, the night before, and sometimes I'm thinking this could be the rudest question I've ever asked a person. But, Nathan, what is it you do here?
So what I do here is we help local businesses with digital marketing on all different platforms, whether it's creating a website, doing search engine marketing, or social media advertising. So my role here is I oversee all the digital marketing that local businesses do with us to make sure they're efficient and on point.
And it's 2022, and when I hear you say we help them develop websites, I would have thought that, like, everybody, you know, has several websites, you know, not only businesses but individuals. But there are businesses that are still not there yet.
Yeah, there's still businesses that aren't there yet or new businesses that are coming in and starting up. We have a new pet grooming company starting up in Morrisville, so we're helping them establish a website before they open day one so people can find them online. And then other things, a lot of businesses have current websites, but they just need help. They're not efficient. They don't have mobile friendly so people can view them on their phones.
Right.
So we go in, we kind of do a deep dive of their website and show them how we can help them.
So they do get dated, don't they?
They do. We have a few out there that still look like they're made in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Not very attractive. You know, websites are now your first impression.
Yep.
As a company. Back in the day when I was growing up, it was a handshake and walking through the door.
Right.
And meeting the customer or client. Now it's people always search you online first and then they come visit you. So you have to have a very clean website, very professional website, and one that's efficient and can work really well for you.
Yeah, it's downloading pretty quickly and
exactly.
Doesn't have graphics, you know, that look like you made them when you were playing Space Invaders and things like that.
Oh, Space Invaders, now you're taking me back. Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly what it is. And we find a lot. We have a great team behind us. We have one gentleman that's worked for Google for 15 years.
No
so
kidding.
He knows Google's best practices for building a website, and he is very passionate about it and loves it. So we got a good team behind us.
Where does your interest in all this, the digital marketing side, come from?
Well, I started my marketing career in the newspaper world. So it was a lot of creativity as far as making ads, making them stand out in local newspapers. As we all know, local newspapers are taking a different turn now, and I've always loved technology and digital. So about actually 2 years ago, Friday, I got a phone call from Corm and said, would you be interested in coming over and leading our digital department? And I jumped right on the opportunity because I just love technology and I love everything about digital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you first sit down with a Radio Vermont Group client, mm-hmm. what is it you're trying to learn from them?
Well, we call a CNA. So we sit down and really find out what their objectives are.
CNA right? means what?
Cost needs analysis, right? So we go in there and
I'm a guy trapped in a radio booth. Nobody talks to me about CNA.
We'll talk about ROI later. Return on investment, you got it.
That
so,
one I know.
So we start with a CNA and then we talk about ROI. So CNA, we get in there and we say, look, what are your objectives? Are you trying to get more phone calls? Are you trying to get more foot traffic? Are you trying to get, you know, what's your objective? To make money? Is it getting your products out in front of people? Is it service-based? And then what we do is we go in with my team and we say, what is the best fit? You know, do they have an attractive website? We don't need to touch that. Do they have good search engine marketing? Then we don't touch that. But they need help on social media platforms to get their name out there and their words out there. Then, you know, we break down which social media platform best fits their business.
Yeah. What are some of those options that are available? I think I know, but if you came to me and you start talking to me about my business, you would probably name 8 things that I don't even know what language you're speaking.
Right.
And I'm fairly savvy, right?
Right.
So what are the things that are available to businesses that you can present them?
So the first thing we look at, of course, is your website build and what we call search engine optimization and search engine marketing.
Okay.
And I'm going to make it really simple.
Okay.
It's the yellow pages online. So search engine optimization is when someone Googles your business or a service that you provide, you show up on the first page organically. So after the paid ads on the top, we want your website to show up on the first page.
Right.
Just like looking in the yellow pages back in the day when I was a kid, you know, you look for who's their appliance repairman, and you got a list of like 7. You have Ormsey's back in the day, you know. And then search engine marketing is like having a huge display ad in the yellow pages.
Yeah.
So search engine marketing is the paid ad section you see on top of a Google search. So you're right on top, your prime real estate when people search you. Boom.
How important is that to be on the first page of when you search?
Very important. So, you know, most people make it maybe to page 2, possibly page 3. But, for example, if you're a roofer and someone has a leaky roof and they need your services right away, you definitely want to be one of the first 5 people that they call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So, that's search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm. And then search engine marketing.
And marketing.
Yep.
Okay.
And what we do is my team and I, every day, we make sure it's optimized. We make sure all the keywords now we're getting really deep into the details.
That's all right.
But the keywords to make sure that they are associated with your business. So if I'm going to use a roofing company, it's roof repair, it's new roof. It's all these words that we are bidding on to make sure whatever someone Googles, those keywords show up, that your name shows up on the result.
And how do you do that for a company? Do you want to tell us or not?
Well, my team and I, you know, we just keep an eye on it. And we have a program that, you know, notifies us when keywords aren't really working out, when we might want to look on them. We produce monthly reports for our clients so we can adjust as we go.
Yeah.
If you're, for example, a hardware store, there's going to be certain times of the year where rakes and outdoor paint and windows are more effective. But you probably don't need those keywords as heavy in you know, January. So we want to switch the keywords up to drive new traffic for what people are looking for to interior.
Well, you got me all jazzed about roofing companies. I'm ready to start my own.
There you go.
Not that I know a thing about roofing, but at least I can maximize my appearance, my my presence there when people do searches. Now, how do you determine what approaches are right for a specific client? You have this kind of coterie of, you know, options.
Right.
Then how do you zoom in and say, okay, for you, this is what we're going to do, this, this, and this? Or
so what I do is with my team, we sit down and kind of have a chat. And, of course, we have history behind us of what we've done for other clients, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of look at that. One thing I will say that separates this group, Radio Vermont Group, is that we're very creative, right? So if we – we'll pick a different industry. If we go into a hairstylist, okay, you know, we're going to talk automatically about TikTok
he's
and how
at
to
me.
Do
– He's I looking am. At me. I'm I dead am. Bald over here. And he says we're going to talk about – hairstylist. You are creative.
I am creative. You're quite creative. You know, I actually had a great spot for a video for a hairstylist with a bald guy. Maybe you could be our model for when we do the video. But it's looking at what platforms are you trying to reach? What age groups are you trying to reach? Oh, I want to get people people that need their hair done before prom. Okay, well, those people are on TikTok. They're not on Facebook.
Right.
So you want to hit the younger generation. You know, we have to do that. The nice thing also about all this digital media, if you're like a hairstylist in Barrie or Montpelier, you don't need to reach people down in Rutland.
Right.
So what we do is we set up what we call a geofence, and we hit certain mile radius from your location so your ads are not being wasted throughout other parts of Vermont that you won't use their service.
Right.
So we can also set up age ranges that your ads show up into. So it's really crazy what we can do, it's so efficient for the client because you're not having any waste.
You know, I mean, people do kind of say, oh man, you know, these ads pop up. I can't stand it, you know, when I'm on this or on that. But quite frankly, I kind of like, you know, I mean, Google and Facebook know I'm a watch nut. I own 50 watches, right?
Right.
And so they're going to keep serving and volleying with me with watch companies, and I don't hate it.
And the one thing that I always tell the local businesses is, wouldn't it be great if all those ads that repopped up wasn't a national brand but was your local business?
Right.
If someone's looking up Weber Grills, I need a new grill. You know, I want them to go to Nelson Hardware.
Exactly.
Because he sells Weber Grills. I don't want them to go to,
he's
big
a big
box
Celtics
store.
Fan.
And he's a huge Celtics fan.
But, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Right. So that's our goal. We want local people to show up more. It's the same with smart TV. So if you have a smart TV device and you tune into, like, apps like Tubi or any other apps, whether it's on a smart TV, a tablet, or cell phone, we want local ads to show up, and we can provide that.
Oh, man. All right. Nathan, you've been talking about the team, which I really like, that, you know, there's other minds coming together saying, well, what about if we did this and this? And I know we've got Stephen Tanzi, who does videos. He's got the drone going. So how does that work into all this?
So when you partner with us and take care of your digital needs, we also have the option for video production. So video is very engaging online. Like everything that you see mostly has a video behind it, whether it's TikTok or on Facebook Reels or Facebook Stories. 9 out of 10 times it's video. So with Steven, it's nice to have a videographer on staff that knows vertical, horizontal formats. We always film in 4K. So if you want to take your commercial and put it on a smart TV and have that ad run, it's always being broadcasted in 4K. Or if it's even on a phone, we mix and match all formats. Plus, with the Radio Vermont Group, of course, we got great voice talent, so we can do great narration for your commercial.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we have such a great voice talent here that we did one for Ted Green Ford over in Stockbridge, and we had it all narrated by Radio Vermont Group, and it came out great.
Oldest Ford dealership in New England.
I had to buy a truck in that commercial. I spent $70,000 of imaginary money on that commercial. My wife said, you really didn't get that, did you? I was like, not yet. We're going to have to talk to Corm about that, but yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I had to talk Stephen down from when we did a job fair at the Barrie Aude. He wanted to fly the drone around in there. But
he's pretty good. And he's licensed. That's another thing I should mention. Licensed. He is licensed through the state. So here's the deal with the state of Vermont. If you want to have a commercial with a drone, you better get someone that's licensed, because if not, you'll get fined. So we sent Stephen up and we got him all licensed. And he can put in when he wants to request to fly over by a hospital or airport. We just have to get permission.
Oh, yeah. These are things to consider, right?
Yeah, and we actually got the drone that, you know, sensors when airplanes are above and drops down automatically, and it's all safe and ready to go. So, yes.
All right. So I've got to imagine that this is, like, not a case of reinventing the wheel, that you can draw upon successful strategies from clients you've worked with in the past, right?
So, yes.
You know, you don't have to mention the client by name, but if you'd like to, that's great. But share how, you know, a success story with us. It would be great to hear how you've gone in, done this, and it's been working well.
I think a great success story is Vermont Castings, also known as Hearth and Home. We've gone in for the last 4 months and really tried to get recruitment ads out there. We've hit TikTok. We've hit Google AdWords. We've hit Google Display Words. We've put ads on YouTube. We've put ads on Facebook. And then we get all the data together, and we show them how much we've driven people to their website to fill out a form or at least see what job openings are available.
Oh, interesting. Great company.
Great company.
Been around. They do incredible work. Mm-hmm. And I can remember having them on during a job fair. And I thought, man, if I had the skills, I would really love to work there. But it's not that simple, right?
It's not that simple, but, you know, it's about getting the information out there. So even when I went out there with Steven and did videos, they have a robotic arm now that grinds the cast iron. And my friend Cody runs it. And they have two other machines ready to set up. They just don't have the operators.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's really great technology. Again, I love tech. So watching this robotic arm pick up a piece of cast iron, sand it down, grind it down, put it back on the conveyor belt. It's pretty amazing. So getting a video of that, but getting that out there, it's not your mom and pop's Vermont Castings anymore, right? So it's about getting that information out there, get people interested. I actually connected them with the local tech school, so they brought some kids over, did a walkthrough, and I think a couple of them after graduation came and worked for them. So it's all about helping them out.
Oh, I bet their eyes lit up seeing that kind of thing.
We also work with Sticks and Stuff a little bit this summer. They were very happy with us. A hardware store that required cooperative funds to be used to place digital ads.
Yeah.
We were able to do that no problem. They're getting great website traffic and inquiries about windows. And we're getting to that time of year. It's starting to get cooler a little bit. So we did that to help drive business.
Yeah, those co-op dollars that come from a national company that you as a retailer handle. There are dollars available.
And we have a co-op guy on staff, so he can actually deep dive into your business co-op, tell you where you can use that co-op money, whether it's traditional radio, TV. But I'll tell you, in the last 2 years, especially because of COVID, a lot of co-op dollars are being forced to be used on digital platforms.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so we can help you on all levels.
Where are you hiding all these team members around here, man?
Well, they got their offices here. They're remote over there, you know.
All right, as long as they're doing work.
They're doing work.
Now, small businesses are always pinched for cash. So how do you work within a budget that a small business would have?
You know, for a small business, the first thing we want to do is generate revenue, right? We don't want them to be small forever,
right?
So the first thing we do is we look at their website, always 100%, because, again, first impression, your website can generate leads for you. People can ask you for your services, so that's where we start on a tight budget. Then we add this SEM, search engine marketing, and then we add social media platforms. So we have a whole funnel that we start with, that you start here, and then after you accomplish this and your numbers are looking good and you're generating business, you're getting a good return on investment with us, we talk about adding this 6 months down the road, a year down the road, whatever your time frame is. We also do pair radio with it, because radio is a perfect pair for digital marketing. So as long as you mention follow us on Facebook or go see us on the web, Google search us, all that data from people listening to you on the radio when they travel to your website gets collected in Google Analytics. It's just a great way to drive people to your website.
Yeah. And it's a great point. You know, I just went back and ordered another thing from a local company that it was so easy using their website the first time, right?
Right.
It's not like, oh, don't put me through that again. It was like, oh, click, click, boom, gone. order done, right?
Exactly. And then we have another website where a lady just really wanted to use her own words on her website, but we didn't want them to affect her search engine optimization keywords. So we worked with her. It took about a week. She wrote in what she would like to put on her website. We suggested a few little tweaks. We came to a happy medium, and we upload it, and she loves it. The other thing she wanted is an easy access button to her social media, because that's where she does her daily updates of what she has to sell in her store.
Yeah.
So we were able to make very easy to get to icons to go visit them on social media.
Is there a percentage of sales that customarily should be set aside for marketing and promotions? Do you work, you know, with that kind of a figure or not?
It all depends. Again, if you're an established business and where your funds are currently going, you know, we have to really, depending how much you want to get in the nitty gritty, of see what your income level is first, and then we kind of base the budget on that.
Yeah. Now, you kind of mentioned this, the synergies that you try to create between a business's digital marketing approach and the broadcasting message and vice versa. So how do you knit those two together to make sure that they really are feeding each other?
Mm-hmm. Whatever you do on traditional media, whether you're still running newspaper ads or on our radio stations, always mention your website or Google us to find your company. The other thing I really enjoy on radio broadcasting is I love sponsorships. I love weather sponsorships or special event sponsorships.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's only 7 seconds that you get to mention your business, but that's 7 seconds to mention your name and website and just drive traffic. So
those little
big
sticks and stuff ads drive
you
me crazy.
It,
I love
yeah,
them a lot.
Yeah.
I always picture Brady Farkas actually playing the guitar kind of,
right,
you know, while he's delivering that message.
We actually do live stream Brady Farkas on Facebook and YouTube every
That's
night
right.
during a
yeah.
show. We could probably arrange a guitar and a little pick and have him play a little jig right on Facebook Live. I mean, I'm game for that.
We don't know for sure if he can actually play guitar.
He better learn real quick, because we just called him out on radio. So.
Banjo, maybe. What's it say?
There you go.
Let's see. We got a call from Serena. It says, what web platforms do you prefer and your thoughts on Squarespace?
Squarespace. Squarespace is a great place to, make financial transactions as far as buying something.
Right.
They have a decent web program. I've actually converted two from Squarespace to ours. We use a program called Luna, which is a version of Wix, but it's kind of customized to be a little bit more efficient. So that's what we use in-house. But I will tell you, for the price that we charge, we do a monthly subscription. We don't do any big fees up front to build a website. Cancel anytime. It's just an easier design for us that meets Google's best practices. So it's good. Squarespace is good. But it's not the most efficient way
gotcha.
To do it. We also, for one client that we do Hallstrom Excavating, they needed a Squarespace widget put into their website so people could make payments online. That was really easy to put in and help them out a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make this sound like breathing right now. We got about 30 seconds left.
Sure.
Who would you like to hear from? How do they get started with you?
Any local Vermont businesses that's looking to expand and get their message out there. We would just love to talk and have a CNA and make sure that we can help you, right?
Yeah.
And easiest way to get hold of me is call the station here. My email's nwright@radiovermont.com. And either way, I'll find you. Just leave a message and we'll get hold of you.
All right. N. Wright is Nathan Wright, and he is the Director of Digital Marketing for the Radio Vermont Group. You can learn more at wdevradio.com. Nathan, it was great having you on the show
pleasure.
Today.
Thanks for
so
having
much.
Me.
We're going to take a break for CBS News. Then we'll be back to meet Randolph artist Jim Sardonis. And coming up today at 1, we've got Travels with Charlie, hosted by Charlie Papillo, followed by 2 hours of The Getaway where with El Grande, Greg Hooker. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
In decades past, you opened a business, hung out your shingle, and the customers came. Today, hanging out your shingle means creating an engaging website. The modern consumer is using the internet to find businesses like yours. Are you positioned so you'll rise to the top of their search? Let the Radio Vermont Group Digital Services work with you to make sure you're visible online and to target your marketing to location, demographic, and interest. Learn more at rvgdigital.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. That first time, you know what I'm talking about. The very first time you did it. Drove up I-89, spotted those two whale's tails. I trust you kept control of your vehicle when you spotted them. I've gotten to the point where, like people do in Key West, looking for the green flash when the sun sets, I try to catch that moment as you're driving when the tips of the two flukes just intersect before they separate. Those sculptures are magical. And as of a few years ago, two tails and flukes have returned to the original site in Randolph, where the pair you now see off the highway at Technology Park in South Burlington began life. It's time to meet the creator of these sculptures and many more, artist Jim Sardonis. Jim, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks very much, Rick. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. Listeners, if you'd like to speak with Jim, you can give us a call at 802-244-1777, 877-291-TALK, or you can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Jim, how did sculpting become your medium?
Well, I was fortunate in high school to spend my junior and senior years at Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and they happened to offer sculpture, which I never would have considered, except it looked interesting, and I needed another course. So I took it and pretty much immediately fell in love with the whole process of making sculptures out of various materials.
Do you remember the first thing you sculpted, Jim?
I remember the first stone carving I made, which I have, was a frog. And I made a orangutan out of welded steel with plaster on it. So I had various materials I was learning about wood and stone carving, clay and plaster modeling, pretty much the traditional materials, which in the 60s, the late 60s, which is when I was there, were not in favor in the art world, but thankfully I had a teacher who was very good at all of them, so I got the kind of basic introduction to working with those materials.
What is it that you think captured your soul then, you know, back then at Phillips Exeter, but, you know, all these years of continuing to do sculpture?
Well, it's just, a kind of a language that came easily to me as a way of expressing feelings and thoughts about nature in particular, which has always been important to me from being a little kid on. I always felt at home out in the woods and, you know, looking for little creatures like snakes and turtles and frogs and things when I was little. And I guess this was a way to kind of show that respect that I had for nature and the beauty of it.
Where did you grow up, Jim?
I grew up in Nashua, New Hampshire, which was about an hour from Exeter. And once I went to Exeter, my parents moved to Southern California. So from that point on, I would have to fly home and spent mostly just vacations out there, summers and Christmas vacations. But I always felt more at home in the East and ended up kind of coming back here after college.
The piece that really is known to people are those whale's tails named Reverence. Can you give us a little history about how and why you created them?
Well, I started out when I moved to Vermont from Boston in the early 70s. I got a job teaching art to elementary school kids in Montpelier, which I did for 6 years. And I was working with the kids at the time. Whales were still being hunted in some places. And I was trying to show kids how artists can use their art to help with various problems and situations. So the kids made a whole bunch of great, you know, posters and drawings and things about saving the whales and stopping the killing of them. And around that time, I had a dream. I woke up from a dream where I had seen these two whales' tails come up out of the water, water cascading off of their tails, and I woke up thinking, boy, this is something I think I need to explore as a sculpture. So I had the idea for quite a while, and I entered a competition up in Anchorage, Alaska, a sculpture competition that a museum there was looking for sculptures, and I proposed this idea for the front of the museum. And in the end, it didn't work out. I was a finalist, and some people wanted mine and others wanted another. In the end, it didn't work out. But I had made these two little bronze models that I had sent up there as my entry. And a fellow in Randolph, who was a friend, had seen these little bronze models, and he called me up not too long after that and said, "Do you think you could make those whales' tails out of granite?" And so I said, "Well, I hadn't considered that, but you know, if you're serious about it, I could look into it." And he was serious, and I did figure out that it was possible to make them each in two pieces. Mm-hmm. The blocks would have been too large to handle if they were large enough to make each one in one piece. So I had designed these pieces to fit together, the flukes at the top and the vertical part of the tail were two separate pieces joined together with steel rods and epoxy. So once I figured out it was possible to do that, he said, "Let's go ahead and do it." He was planning to make a motel conference center in Randolph, right at exit 4. Mm-hmm. And he thought this would make a good entry to the hotel. So I ended up making them in Barrie. I worked at a place called Granite Importers, and with some of their expertise and big cranes and forklifts and abilities to move these pretty big blocks of granite. They started out, I think, totaling about 40 tons between the two blocks. Anyway, during the process of making them, this fellow got involved in a big international lawsuit and ended up having first the sculpture was completed and was installed on his site, but after that he had to stop everything. He had to discontinue plans for the hotel, and in fact ended up having to sell the property, which was the site right across from what is now McDonald's. Mm-hmm. At exit 4. It wasn't there at the time, but he sold the land to another developer in Randolph who didn't want to pay extra for the sculpture. So he gave this guy, David, a year to find a home for them. And during that time, he almost sold them to what used to be a National Hockey League team, the Whalers.
Oh, right.
And they were considering it, apparently, but then they moved to a different location, and that didn't work out. But in the end, these people, a partnership of people called Technology Park Partners, decided they wanted to create a little sculpture park on their property in South Burlington. So they ended up buying these whale's tails, which are the ones called Reverence. And they asked me to get them moved, which turned out to be quite a project.
Jim, in 2019, Whale's Dance was dropped into place where the original tails had lived. How did that come about?
Well, it was a pleasant surprise when I was contacted. The owner of the property who had bought it from the original owner had plans for quite a large development on that spot that included buildings and lots of various things that a whole group of people from Randolph were greatly opposed to, and kind of got a lot of people together and money collected, and with the help of the Preservation Trust of Vermont, ended up conserving the land, the spot where the original whale's tails spent their first 10 years was conserved, and I was asked, first of all, if I could get the old ones back, which, for one thing, they weren't for sale, and also I didn't want to try to move them again because it was quite difficult, but I told them I would be willing to do something along the same lines, but it would need to be in bronze, which is what I've decided I'm only working in at this point. So after donations came in for me to seriously think about it, I started making a series of models, quite a few different versions of two tails together. And because it was going to be made out of bronze, which is a very strong metal that could be bolted to a foundation, I knew I could do more with the movement between these two tails. They could tip and bend and twist a little more than I could with stone because of the weight of it. They had to be a little more upright. So anyway, I ended up with this piece. I call it Whale Dance. And I had always thought of even the original ones as kind of dancing forms. but this one is a little bit larger. It's 16 feet tall and has, as I said, a little more movement and dancing to it.
It absolutely does. A perfect title for it. I had Nathan Wright in here last half hour, who's from Randolph, says he sees people stopping at Whale Dance every single day. Jim, you're not a politician who has made an impact on the state. You're not a member of Fish. So how does it feel to know that you will have an enduring legacy in Vermont for what you've created?
Well, it feels great. You know, I love seeing all the people stopping and taking photos every so often. I stop there to check on them. They do, unfortunately, get a little graffiti on them from time to time, which we have to take care of. But with the number of people that seem to stop and look at them, it's, you know, it's fairly minor. But I feel wonderful about having contributed this little piece of a unique piece to Vermont.
Now, you make these wonderful sculptures. Are you still making jewelry, Jim?
I do. I still make both sculptures and jewelry.
I've always wondered, I kind of marvel at the dichotomy of you working with the delicacy of jewelry and the grand scale of your sculptures. So, you know, how do you make both work?
Well, the funny thing is, the very first piece of jewelry I ever made was a ring that consisted of two whales' tails meeting together. And that was because I'd had the idea for the sculpture, but I didn't have anybody to pay for the large one. So I started experimenting with the jewelry. I made rings and bracelets that both had the same design. And in fact, it was included in the Greenpeace catalog back almost 40 years ago now.
Oh my gosh.
But I love working in all sizes. You know, the small scale jewelry is basically like miniature sculpture, and the larger ones are a lot of fun to do. They just require quite a large budget, and
yeah.
I've been fortunate to have found quite a few places for them.
Jim, we have a couple minutes left. A special piece has got to be Braintree Panthers, which Vermonters can view. Tell us about how this piece came about, where the granite came from.
Well, it happened in conjunction with Vermont's bicentennial, which I think was 1991, and the Braintree Historical Society wanted to do something to, in honor of the bicentennial at the beautiful meeting house that they have on top of Braintree Hill. And there was a committee that wanted to hear ideas that I had. And when I mentioned the idea of a panther or a mountain lion, which used to be prevalent in Vermont, everybody kind of perked up and really liked the idea. So there was a resident of Braintree who owned a former granite quarry that quarried what they called Braintree pink granite, who allowed us to go in and take out a couple of blocks of it. I had a friend who worked for Rock of Ages who helped me with drilling and splitting it out of the ground, and that's the granite that we used for a family of panthers, a mother and two cubs, which was designed for children to climb on.
Yeah, and it's absolutely stunning. Jim Sardonis creates sculptures in Randolph, and you can learn more about his work at sardonis.com. Jim, it was great having you on the show this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me, Rick. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care. And I do want to mention we earlier had Nathan Wright on. I want to make sure you know the spelling of Wright is W-R-I-G-H-T. So if you'd like to email him, nwright, NRWRIGHT at RadioVermont.com. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is directed by Danny McGivrigan. Feel free to suggest guests or topics by emailing VTViewpoint at RadioVermont.com. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by subscribing to them at WDEVRadio.com. Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre is up next. I'm Rick Singeri. I'll meet you back here tomorrow when we discuss Annie Oakley. We hang out with Trav Travers and Zeb Norris, and we discuss the economy and gas prices.